We're in a work session in House Bill 2488.
Mr. Chair, just while we've been on break, I've just been trying to sort through at least my understanding of this particular piece. And part of my understanding is that there's other bills that are out there in regard to this issue that had a different set of amendments that are different from those which are the highlighted amendments. And
this is on 2790.
I'd just like someone to come forward and maybe and highlight what those are. I mean, I understand. Everyone says that they came to the gunfight today without their guns. Nobody has their stuff prepared, but there's a lot of people running around out there. So,
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, my name is Tom Gallagher, representing PG&E National Energy Group. The answer which you stated is I don't have my file, but what we did here was with the on page 1, section 5, line 19, the original idea of an energy generation enterprise zone was something that Senator Beyer came up with. In discussions with the counties led by Gordon Foltz, we amended that out. We fixed that, and we came up with something quite simpler, which says that these are simply amendments to existing enterprise zones. And they allow the Economic Development Department to put these up, and then that would put, since most of them would be in the counties, put the counties in charge of the enterprise zones. So there are, leaving aside all of the pieces that have to do with the contracting and that part of it, the other pieces of the bill are generally different from this and don't relate to a specific new type of enterprise zone. So, and I don't have those draft of amendments in front of me. Secondly, when we did this, there were a number of other groups that are behind me that had pieces and other amendments that went in to protect some individual pieces. Tom, in terms of energy, well, I'll let him speak for that. In fact, most of them are here. They can go ahead. So there just were other pieces that have to go in here.
Well, okay, let me ask a question. We'll just ask it blunt. Do you want to work 2790? Can we come to terms on it? I mean, because the last conversation I had was nobody wanted it, and so if we're going to start bringing in all those elements from 2790, more than happy to. We can bring this back on Thursday, you know, if there's a willingness to do that in terms of and to accommodate the whole thing, because I don't think the desire or the intention here was to try to accommodate 2790. I mean, I think that's the impression that. If you have it, that's incorrect. So if that's what we want to do, I'm more than happy to go there and see if we can work this down to something that accommodates all the other components that may not be part of the amendments here.
Mr. Chair, Tom Gallagher again. I think that in terms of getting the bill right for everything but the debate over the Doug Riggs amendments, I think that's a better policy than letting this one slide like this. So I would do that. We still have the disagreement over the other.
Okay.
Chairman Hill, members of the committee, Robin Freeman, Oregon PUD Association. We didn't take a position on this bill, but we have an amendment that basically just lets us serve these generating plants if they locate within our service districts. There was a question about whether or not we could provide ancillary services. So ours is just a clarifying amendment to 3790, and we would certainly ask that if this goes forward, this amendment goes forward, we would be able to add that amendment.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Tom O'Connor, Oregon Municipal Electric Utilities. If I can help clarify a little, if the bill were to move forward with the intent to limit or prohibit certain kinds of output taxes. In that case, then I had worked with Tom Gallagher on section 28 I had worked with Tom Gallagher on some language that is encompassed here in this version in section 28 on page 8 that clarifies that our municipal electric utility in lieu of taxes are not impacted by this particular restriction. So that's my interest in this, and I believe this language is the correct one, but I think I can double check.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Andrea Fogg with the League of Oregon Cities. You probably heard this today, but haven't had the chance to cross-reference this language with language that we worked on previously, so I couldn't tell you if the sections are the same. I can tell you, you know, our concerns. One is we have been favorable to some sort of a enterprise zone if it is a useful tool for local governments in locating these facilities. In terms of Section 28 of the bill, we had worked previously to make the language better, but still opposed to the section because it is a local government preemption.
Okay. Anyone else?
I'm just wondering, as a matter of policy, if, you know, creating enterprise zones for the creation of power generating facilities, correct? Do the ratepayers in Oregon get preferential treatment in terms of accessing the supply of power? Or is this, are these plants going to ship power to make a profit out of state?
I guess that's a question we can ask Tom Gallagher to come back up and see what somebody can ask him that question. Tom, you want to answer that before we go to this other panel?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question clearly.
Thank you, Tom. I'm just wondering, you know, we're creating, we're disadvantaging the state of Oregon in terms of tax benefits and so forth to businesses for the development of electrical power generating sites and plants. And will Oregon ratepayers have first priority in using the supply that's generated, or will this supply of power be shipped for profit to more advantageous markets out of state?
Mr. Chair, Representative Will, do you want the long or the short answer?
I want the
correct one.
Correct answer.
They're both correct. Anybody who's building a power plant in Oregon has every intention of selling power in Oregon.
You need to speak a little louder for me, Tom.
You're as deaf as I am. I'm
getting old.
Anybody building a power plant in Oregon.
He must have went to charm school today or something.
I didn't mean that. Anyway. Anybody building a power plant in Oregon has every intention of selling power in Oregon. The question is there a customer? So if you delay deregulation for 2 years, for some of those people, they won't be able to sell directly into that market. The other customers in Oregon are potentially the utilities, and the utilities, many of them are buying power now in the open market. The second piece of that is they'll buy the power where it's the cheapest. I mean, that's what they're, if you're a utility buying power, that's what you want to do, is you want to get the cheapest power, therefore the best rates for Oregonians. So if they buy power from one of the facilities being built in Oregon, it's going to have to be because that facility is competitive in its sale price for that power.
So the answer is no.
The answer is we're going to try. But you're making it very difficult for us to sell power in Oregon when you delay the process, if it delays open access, because that takes away less customers. And and what happens to the utilities where they purchase their power, whether they build their own power or purchase on the market, will have an impact on whether or not we can do it. So my biggest fear, when I talk about delaying restructuring or deregulation as having an impact on siting, is precisely the one you raise, that somebody will build a facility here, it will have no customers here, it may very well have used a tax reduction, and it will sell power into the regional grid. Now, selling power into the regional grid does have an impact on all the prices, because everybody buys regionally, buys off the grid, so the more power there is on the grid, you know, under the law of supply and demand, the price should go down. But that is the biggest reason for the chill on the delay of opening up more customers and more buyers to the siting, is that if you site in Oregon and there are no customers in Oregon, it will not be a good policy issue.
Thank you. Next question. This in discussing sites and jobs that this brings into Oregon and that kind of thing, to I have heard that if you drive by some of these sites and you look at the cars in the parking lot, the workers are from out of state. Does this bill address that problem in any way?
Chair Hill, Representative Lowell, there are different types of workers that work on these projects. Some of them are highly skilled and are mobile and do come from other places. Even when you hire a union contractor, would hire union electricians, many of those cars in the parking lot will be from out of state. So if you're siting in a place like Hermiston, the ability to get all of the skilled workers out of the Hermiston area to build a power plant of this magnitude isn't very likely. There are jobs that are available to local people, but there are other jobs that are of technicality will be drawn from a region, whether it's a union contractor or a non-union contractor. Does this bill add to that? I think the answer is yes. We have developed a number of amendments and consistent amendments that promote and expand the economic development ability to do local hires and first source agreements. Right now, the first source agreements do not apply to construction. Principally, they didn't apply to construction because the restrictions on where this labor comes from is more difficult than a permanent job. So we've consistently offered to put those amendments in and had those amendments prepared for 3788 and 3790. So yes, in terms of some additional local hire, this bill would help, and so would other amendments. If the object is to get local hire, we're 100% in favor of that. We'll put every issue we can in to get local hire.
I appreciate that, because if we're going to give an Oregon tax break this magnitude to companies, I want Oregonians to benefit, and for as long term as possible. Maybe that's selfish, but I'm glad you feel that way too.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowell, that, you know, the exchange of tax credits, whether or not we get tax credits and whether or not we get the other, is one of the reasons why 3790 isn't moving. I mean, without all of the other quids and quos, we didn't think it was reasonable to go for the tax breaks. So that's why, with all of the other things, we aren't pushing 3790 anymore.
Appreciate your candor. And also your comment about me aging.
I'm not aging.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jessica Harris, and I'm here today on behalf of the Associated General Contractors. We represent 1,200 commercial contractors in Oregon and Southwest Washington, and no one in this building cares more about ensuring that my members get work than I do, and that local businesses are employed, and that these kinds of projects benefit my folks here in the state. But I can tell you that this amendment before you and the requirements that you see in sections 30, 31, and 32 will not benefit my folks. They will not help them in the long run. These jobs that come in often are technical. A lot of our folks will do sub work. Some of them will do general contractor work. But these projects and other projects, whether they're done with a tax credit or not, are highly technical and very difficult. And the relationship between an owner and a contractor on a private project is negotiated. A lot of these relationships about trying to hire locally are part of that negotiation. No owner wants to be in the middle of a dispute on a project. And no contractor wants to be in the middle of one either. It slows work down and reduces profit. So we do the best we can, as often as we can, to get local folks on the job. But these are public contracting requirements. So these are requirements that are placed on contractors when they do public work. Under no other tax credit scenario in the state are these requirements forced on contractors. And they're there for a reason, because those are not public works jobs. They're private construction projects. And the sanctity of the relationship between the owner and the contractor in a negotiated private work project should remain. Yes, we can do things to bring in local folks, and we support that.
But where else in terms of usually under a scheme, other tax break schemes, there's some tangible benefits back to the state in terms of either there's agreements on jobs, job creation, the unfortunate story on these generation plants is that they don't create
very many long-term jobs. They're very efficient enterprises, and you know, in terms of the plants run by 20 people, so the local economy isn't really impacted greatly there. We're giving away property taxes in terms of, so what is the tangible benefit here? What is the benefit to the taxpayer for inciting someone to come and purchase or construct a facility? In terms of, you know, if this is one of those things in terms of where the tangible benefits can be drawn out to the public at all, you know, this seems to be one in which we can put Oregonians to work.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't disagree with you. There are tangible benefits here, and the tangible benefits are in increased power and ensuring that Oregonians have access to competitive rates in this state. And I think
there's no insurance of that. I mean, where's the insurance of that? In terms of, is there a, you know, an agreement that says Oregon ratepayers have right of first refusal? Is that part of this? In terms of, by, you know, I mean, all of this electricity, you know, can be sent elsewhere, and it's not going in. It's not. There's no guarantee that Oregon taxpayers receive any tangible benefits from it. I mean, yes, the supply is there, you know, but I mean, it's like, you know, I guess we could start asking the questions in terms of why. Did they offer tax breaks in the state of Washington? Did the, you know, in terms of to incite people to construct facilities there? I mean, I'm trying to understand. I mean, if it's built on the other side of the river, you know, it addresses the regional supply issue.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think that whether it's built on the other side of the river, whether it's built on this side of the river, you know, either way, the supply is there, and I think that's an important public benefit. The fact that we are facing perhaps an energy shortage as we head into this summer and into next winter, I speaks for itself and why we need these kind of energy facilities in the state. And supply alone is a benefit to Oregon and ratepayers. Further, when you talk about creation of jobs, again, to the extent that we can get local folks on the job, we support what Mr. Gallagher spoke about bringing in separate local hire amendments, but we don't believe that the concepts that are here to talk about specific requirements on public works jobs belong in statute when you're talking about a private construction project. We don't believe that those are necessary, and we believe that those interfere in private construction. We just fundamentally disagree about that. We would look forward and would be willing to work on amendments that speak to when advantageous hiring local workers if those workers are qualified to do the jobs that are there.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller, I represent the Associated Builders and Contractors and the Independent Electrical Contractors. Sections 30 through 32, we have opposed these amendments throughout the course of this session. It has popped up in a number of bills, as Mr. Gallagher indicated. We opposed them. We thought that three strikes should be out. Unfortunately, on this particular one, they're going at a fourth time at this particular amendment. We do oppose the added burden on prevailing wage on private construction work. We do support local hire. We fully support the benefits of building these energy facilities to our local contractors and our local business folks. One of the problems on these particular projects is when they do, something does go out to a bid on a subcontract and it's very highly technical and you will put it out to bid, there'll be no one in the area that can do the work. Now, unfortunately, the contractor still has to get the work done. And therefore they have to go then other avenues to get that work done. But again, we would support local hire and the local communities doing the work first. This is an added burden when we would just ask that you do not move this forward. If any questions, I'd be happy to answer. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Julie Brandis, representing Associated Oregon Industries. AOI is philosophically opposed to public contracting law or public contracting provisions being applied to private construction. We believe, especially in this case, it sends the wrong message to the competitive generation community that Oregon is trying to attract. The state will, under the provisions, the state will mandate portions of public contracting law onto private construction. It will be a disincentive to those companies. I think Jessica and Sean have both stated very clearly some of the concerns. Many companies locating in current enterprise zones, not the energy enterprise zones, do work with local communities to create standards. For example, local hiring. And again, that is something that we wouldn't oppose within this legislation. The purpose of the energy enterprise zone is to promote the siting of long-term generation plants. And we think that's a positive thing for Oregon. It is the current energy policy of the state, and we recommend you oppose those amendments and send the right message.
Anyone else want to testify? I know we're in work session. Otherwise, we're gonna just do this on Thursday. We're gonna work some amendments and do this on Thursday, is my understanding.
You're not ready to move the dash twos?
No.
I am. No? We're not?
So we'll stand at ease until the chair, Uncle Adams, is here.